So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 6, text 37. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. And I forgot to mention Astasaki, Murali Manohar, Parasaram, who are joining us this morning for class, a lot of devotees. So, Yavat Surya Udeti Sma Yavat Cha Vati Tishtati Tat Sarvam Yovanasvatsya Mandatu Shetram Uchute Yavat Surya Udeti Sma Yavat Cha Pratitishtati Tat sarvam yovanashvasya mandatu shitramuchyate yavat surya deti smaha yavat cha pratatishtate tat sarvam yovanashvasya Mandatu Shetramuchyate Yavat Surya Udeti Smaha Yavat Cha Pratitishtate Tat Sarvam Yovanashvasya Mandatu Shetramuchyate Yavat Surya Deti Sma
Yavat
Cha Pratitishtati Tat Sarvam Yovanashvasya Alright. Yavat. As long as. Suryaha. The sun. Udeti. Has risen on the horizon. Sma. In the past. Yavat. As long as. Cha. Also. But the tishtati continues to stay. Tat. All those things mentioned above. Sarvam. Everything. Yovanashvasya. Of the son of Yuvanashva. Mandatuhu, called Manpada. Kshetram, location. Uchite, is said to be. Translation, all places from where the sun rises on the horizon, shining brilliantly, to where the sun sets are known as the possession of the celebrated Mandata, the son of Yuvanashva. You can repeat? All places.
All places.
From where the sun rises on the horizon.
Shining brilliantly.
To where the sun sets.
Are known as the possession.
Of the celebrated Mandata.
The son of
Yuvanashva.
So
there's no purport to this text, nor the next text. Well, the next text says that. That has a purport. So text 38. Shasha bindor duhitori bindu macham dari adan ripaha huru kuchsam parisham muchukundam chayoginam. Mandata begot three sons in the womb of Bindu Mati, the daughter of Jasa Bindu. These sons were Purukutsa, Ambarisha, and Muchukunda, a great mystic yogi. These three brothers had 50 sisters who all accepted the great sage Sobari as their husband. We'll get into a romantic description. Yumunantar jale magnas tapyamana param tapaha nivritimina rajasha vishtra maituna dharminaha jata sprihon ripam vipra kanyam ekam yachata. So pyaha Priyatam Brahman Kamam Kanya Swayam. Sobari Rishi was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Yamuna when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual affairs. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life, and induced by this desire, he went to King Mandata and begged for one of the king's daughters. In response to this request, the king said, O Brahmana, any of my daughters may accept any husband according to her personal selection. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Vijaya. This is the beginning of the story of Sobari Rishi. According to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Mandata was the king of Mathura, and Sobari Rishi was engaged in austerity while submerged deep within the river Yamuna. When the Rishi felt sexual desire, he emerged from the water and went to King Mandata to ask that one of the king's daughters become his wife. So there's a lot to tell about this story. So, Omayana Tivinandasha Gananjana Shulakaya Chakshu Unmirikam Yena Tasmai Shigarve Namaha. So this story is related, at least the part of the story, or the reason for Sobari Muni feeling sexual desire, is related in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of the story of the Kaliyan Nag and Krishna chastising the Kaliyan Nag. So the story is as follows. Actually, it involves Garuda, the bird carrier of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll start with that story. The birth of Garuda. Once upon a time, Kashyapa Muni, he was one of the Prajapatis, had two wives. He had more than that, actually. But two wives, as far as this story is concerned. And the two wives are Kadru and Vinata. So they were given the choice by Kashyapa that which one of you wants 100 sons and which one of you wants 2 good sons. So naturally, one of them chose 100 sons, and that was Kadru. And Vinata said, I want 2 good sons. And somehow or other, this was genetically arranged so that these children would appear from eggs. Not internal eggs, like in the case of a woman's womb,
but external eggs, like in the case of birds or snakes, which we're going to tell about. Actually, birds are called dwija, which means they're twice born, because once they come out, another time they hatch. So, to tell a long story short, then Kadru gave birth to 100 snakes, or they came out of the eggs. And Vinita gave birth to 2 eggs, one of which she cracked open prematurely, and that became Aruna, the charioteer, the sun god, was a half-formed bird. And the other basically came out, she waited enough time, and that was Garuda. So what happened is that there was a bet between these 2 co-wives of Kashyapa, and I'm not going to get into the details of that because we could go on with this story forever. But anyway, Kadru won the bet, and therefore Vinita's 2 sons, or at least Garuda, had to become the servant of his snake half-brothers. So he was flying around being the servant of his snake half-brothers, and basically he tried to kill them one time, which is quite interesting, by flying too high, but Kadru managed to have them, the rain come down, being sent by Indra so that they didn't burn to death, because snakes are cold-blooded. So then what happened is that he wanted to find out how he could get his freedom from these snake half-brothers. So he went to the snake half-brothers and said, "My dear snake half-brothers, how can I get freedom?" And they said, "Well, bring the nectar, the amrit. This is a nectar of immortality that the demigods possess that was churned from the milk ocean." So he said, "Bring the nectar," they said, "and let us drink it." So he said, "Okay." So he went to get this nectar, and he had to fight off the demigods in order to get it. Finally, he comes back with the nectar, and as he is coming back with the nectar, several things happen. One is Indra made friends with him because he couldn't defeat Garuda, because Garuda was so powerful. And he said, "Just give them the nectar, but tell them that they have to take a bath before they can drink the nectar, and I'll steal it back." And Garuda agreed to that because he didn't want the snakes living eternally. And then he asked for benediction, and Indra said, "Okay, we'll give you a benediction." And Garuda said, "I want to have snakes as my meal." And actually, he was blessed even before that by his father Kashyapa to be able to eat anything, basically. He is omnivorous. Omnivorous. Omni means all. Omnivorous means eating everything except the only one thing he's not allowed to eat is Brahmins. But he can eat human beings. But he's not allowed to eat Brahmins. Of course, there was that one story in the Mahabharata how he went to a village of Nishadas, lower class human beings, and to eat them to get the strength to steal the nectar. And he was eating, and unfortunately a Brahmin entered his mouth, because the Brahmin had married one of the low-class ladies. And so what happened is he felt a burning sensation in his throat. He said, "Okay, better get out, because I'm not supposed to eat Brahmins." Anyway, so he had gotten the benediction that he was allowed to eat anything, and especially snakes and fish are his favorite dishes. And also, he got the benediction from Lord Vishnu that he would be always on Lord Vishnu's chariot, his flag on Lord Vishnu's chariot, and in this way he would be higher than Lord Vishnu. And he would also be the carrier of Lord Vishnu. So he's an eternal associate of Lord Vishnu. In fact, it's described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Garuda is an expansion of one of the coward boys in Vrindavan. So, this is another point. Anyway, and it's a fact that every associate of the Lord in any of the Vaikuntha planets is an expansion, or has been expanded from an eternal associate of Garuda Vrindavan. So, getting back to the story, so what happened is Garuda gave the snakes their nectar, and Indra stole it back, and snakes were pretty upset, and that's how they got four tongues because they were licking the grass upon which the nectar was sitting. So snakes were upset, and Garuda at that point decided that he would eat snakes and fish. So let's get back to the story here. So what happened is that the Sobari Rishi, he was associating a lot with fish. As we see here. Obviously, if you're meditating in the water, it's like being in a big fish tank. And I know devotees and people who have fish in their house, they associate a lot with the fish. You know, they look at the fish, isn't it pretty, keeps a good atmosphere, and they make faces at the fish and everything like that. Isn't it? They get attached to the fish. And also, people have dogs, get attached to dogs. We recently experienced that. That it's natural. You get attached to animals that are, say, lesser than you. It's easier to get attached to an animal that's dependent on you. Like a dog. You know, the dog follows you everywhere. He's obsequious. Of course, fish don't follow you everywhere. That would be inappropriate and harmful to the fish. So anyway, so it's mentioned by the acharyas that he became attached to fish, not to eating the fish, but he thought, these are my buddies. And what happened is that Garuda naturally is allowed to eat fish. It's actually, there's different living entities that are allowed to eat different types of other living entities. Human beings are not allowed to eat fish, meat, eggs, and stuff like that. But it's not wrong for, let's say, a tiger to eat flesh. It's not wrong for a bird to eat worms, or snakes, or fish. That is their allotted food. That is their quota. So Garuda's allotted quota, even though he's a devotee, because his body is different, he's allowed to eat fish. It's not sinful for him. I mean, I don't know whether he offers it to Krishna first, but at least he's allowed to do it. So the Shobari Muni, he committed a great offense against Garuda because Garuda is a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what he did is, first of all, he forbade Garuda from coming to the Yamuna River. That's the first point. Because these are my fish, and I'm protecting them. You know, he developed a friendship with them. And secondly, he warned Garuda that if you come, I'm going to curse you. And then Garuda actually came and ate not only just the fish, he ate the king of the fish. Kingfish. Anyway, he ate the king of the fish, you know, the head fish, and all the other fish it's described in the, by the acharyas were in anxiety and lamenting. I guess he was the alpha male amongst the fish or whatever it is. I mean, that's described by the acharyas. They were all lamenting and they were in anxiety. And then Sobari Muni committed the final offense. And what was the final offense? The final offense was that he cursed the Buddha. And he said, if you come back here again, you're going to die. So Garuda, he didn't have to go along with the curse. Because Garuda, being a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is much more powerful than any sage. And even described like Parikshit Maharaj could have counteracted the curse that he was given by Shingi to die in 7 days. But he accepted it. So Garuda accepted it. And basically, somehow or other, Kaliya, who was actually being tortured by Garuda elsewhere, understood this is the place, this is a safe haven for snakes. So Kaliya understood this. He was the only one who understood that. So he ran away from Garuda. He was previously in Fiji. Anyway, there's a whole story of Kaliya. So he ran away, meant run away, actually. He swam away or slithered away from Garuda and went to the Yamuna River. And he was in the Yamuna River, and because Kaliya was not just like an ordinary snake, like your garden snake, or even like a copperhead, he was poisoning the whole Yamuna River. So the interesting thing is, one of the interesting things is, of course this happened after Shobhari Muni left the Yamuna. The interesting thing is that Shobhari Muni was sentimentally attached to protecting the fish, but ultimately he was the cause of the demise of all the fish too. He was the cause of all the fish dying. Why was he the cause of all the fish dying? Can anyone think of why? Nobody has. Yeah, because he prohibited Kaliya from killing a few fish. A Garuda from killing a few fish. And therefore, Kaliya came and killed all the fish. Kaliya didn't eat the fish, but by his poison, not only the fish were killed, but also all the trees. Everything was killed except for one tree, a Kadamba tree. And the reason that tree was not killed was that that was the tree that Garuda dropped a little bit of nectar on, because he knew that was the tree that Krishna was going to jump from when he entered into the Kaliya lake. So anyway, so here you find a Shobhari Muni committing really big offenses against a devotee. I mean, three big offenses. Prohibiting him, warning him, cursing him. And because of that, not because the fish, you know, you see some fish. I mean, how many people have become sexually excited seeing fish? I mean, Hare Krishna. You know, that's really far out. I should probably tell the story one time. Not only did he watch the fish, but the fish, you know, rubbed past certain parts of his body that agitated him. I mean, but really, Hare Krishna. People don't become agitated by fish, usually. Anyway, so because of that offense, his desires grew to such an extent that he became overwhelmed by these desires. And he was such a great sage that he was able to meditate in the water, hold his breath. We talk about meditating in the water. He was able to stay in the water without breathing. Can you imagine that? Such a great sage. And then he dove out of the water. His desires became too intense. So what does this mean for us? This means when we commit offense against devotees in particular, then one of the results is, of course, the first result is you lose the taste, the hearing and chanting. And the second result is your material desires become overwhelming. You can't control them anymore. Oh, you know, imagine just fish agitating someone's desires. And then, even though he was a great sage, he thought, oh, I gotta get married. You know, he's like, and he was just like lusty because of offenses against the devotees. So, of course, the story ends nicely, as we're gonna read here. He does marry these 50 girls, and we're gonna read later on. Actually, most of these verses I don't want to get proof for, so we can just tell it, because we're gonna read that tomorrow. Anyway, so basically, in order to marry these 50 girls, because as we read here in the purport, in the verse, the king said, "Any one of my daughters who wants to accept you can accept you." But the reason he said that is because he thought that none of his daughters was going to accept Shobhari Muni, because being in the water for so many years, he was quite wrinkled. I don't know if any of you remember when you were young, little kid, you know, being in the bathtub for many, many hours. You know, your mother would take care of you in the bathtub like that. Oh, my dear little baby. Then you got wrinkles all over your body. Somehow or other, you don't get that when you're swimming, but only in the bathtub. I don't know why. Because it's probably soap and hot water and everything like that. Anyway, so you get wrinkles. So he was so wrinkled. And, you know, seaweed coming out of his hair, you know. Probably hasn't combed his hair, grown his beard, you know. Imagine a beard being grown in the water for years and years. It was around, yeah, great. Mucus, or, you know.
Barnacles.
Yeah, whatever. Barnacle Bob. And so the king understood that none of his daughters was going to be attracted. You know, here's this crazy-looking sage. So what he did is he used his mystic powers to turn himself into a young man. And when he turned himself into a young man, his body into a young body, then not only did one girl like him, but all 50 loved him. So what happened is that he married all 50. He was so lusty. He married all 50, and his life became very complicated. Because as soon as you accept more than absolutely necessary to maintain the body, life becomes extremely complicated. Like that typical story the prophet tells about the Brahmin and his underwear. That the Brahmin had some trouble because he was cleaning his, he only had one set of underwear. And the rats kept eating it. And then he had to get a cat to take care of the rat, or to eat the rat. And then he had to get a wife to take care of the cat. And then he had to get a cow. I mean, at first there was a cow, to feed the cat. Then he had to get a wife to take care of the cow. And then he had to get a job to take care of the wife. And just, you know, a little problem. It just snowballs. It's like we have snow here. When I was young, you know, we would live in the mountains, and we'd take a snowball, roll it down the hill, and we'd get big, you know, little tiny snowball. And you roll it down, it becomes like, wow, as big as this dome. And of course, I didn't think it was this dome. So it's like that. You have a little problem. I wanted to be in love, you know, and then it turns out to be, oh my God. God! Oh my God! Pumsa striya mituni bhavmitum, ayoritu, vriya granti aho, atobri akshetra sutapta vitaya dinasimo homyam hamamating. Oh my God! All I wanted was a little love. Anyway, all I wanted was a little love. And then just magnifies it. Oh my God, you're entangled. And you don't know how to get out. Anyway, so he was... that would be a little dramatic. So anyway, so he was completely entangled, 50 wives, and then finally, you know, he comes to a realization after many, many years. He says, wow, we're all in Maya. He says to his wives. And they all agree, yes, we've been in Maya. And they take Vanaprastha. And there's a happy ending. He goes back to home, back to Godhead. And the reason there's a happy ending, this is actually described by the Acharyas, is that in spite of having committed an offense against Garuda in these different ways, he has gotten the benediction of Lamina and Yamuna and been in Vrindavan. So of course that doesn't mean you can excuse all your offenses, because you may have to go through a whole life of having 50 wives before you become Krishna conscious. Which would be fate worse than death. So anyway, so unless you're like that king and that Scheherazade story, where you kill them all anyway. So what happened is that he ultimately went back to Godhead. He had self-realization. He understood he had committed an offense against Garuda, realized that the offense was the cause of his developing material desires. And he and his wife achieve spiritual perfection. So this story actually has a very happy ending. But what we can learn from this story is to be very, very careful around pure devotees. On the other hand, if we serve pure devotees, Mahatseva Mahoravi Muktes, then we can make great spiritual advancement and become liberated. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarvasa Shukoi. Lava Matra Sada Sangha Sada Sadihoi. Prabhupada described the association of the pure devotees and the association of the deities to to be something like the sun. The sun can either warm you or it can burn you. So one has to be very, very careful. So if you find Garuda, he wants to eat fish, help him. No problem. So on that happy note, so any questions or comments about anything we said in class? Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Anyway, it's an interesting story, the Shobhi movie story, and the story of Kaliya. And, of course, ultimately, you know, we can finish the story of Kaliya. Ultimately, Krishna chastised Kaliya. He jumped on his head, had a dance on Kaliya's head. The residents of Vrindavan were completely, absorbed in anxiety and fainting because they thought Krishna was going to be hurt. And then Krishna left his footprints on the heads of all the Kaliya. And then he banished Kaliya from the Yamuna, and Kaliya went back to Fiji, which is where he resides now. Now he's a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he protects the devotees. There's an interesting story about that in Fiji. Once upon a time, some rascals, they firebombed our temple in Fiji, one of our temples. Firebomb means they threw these Molotov cocktails, you know, the Coke bottles or something like that filled with petrol or gasoline. And what happened is there were five young men who did this. And, of course, the fire department, what they call the fire brigade, came right away. And only half the temple was burnt. And the other half, where the deities were, nothing was damaged. It was only the front half of the temple. But what happened is that within the next 2 years, those five young boys, each of them died. And devotees had nothing to do with it. Each of them died through different means. One had an automobile accident, another caught a disease, etc. They all died. And then the chief of the natives there, because they had native chiefs, had a dream, and Kaliya appeared to him. And Kaliya happens to be known as one of the people, one of the, gods that they worship in Fiji. So he appeared to the native chief, and he told the native chief, "Don't bother my devotees anymore, else I'll kill all of you."
Wow.
So Kaliya does reside in Fiji right now. So any questions or comments?
Gurudev, I'm really kind of curious about because obviously some offenses are just blatant. Other ones, you know, may not be so obvious to us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know that we have to be so careful, but, you know, finding that balance of not being, like, paranoid to, like, step out of your authority or...
No, you can't be paranoid about it.
But, you know, just trying to be sensitive. Like,
yeah,
how do you manage that?
That's interesting. I mean, sometimes it's an accidental mistake or accidental violation of the of etiquette. And that's not taken as an offense because one doesn't know any better. But if one does it with the, you know, it depends on one's attitude. Actually, it depends on one's attitude. Because one devotee was asking me this question yesterday, that sometimes we see people, devotees go on Harinam, and sometimes we see people who, like, yell at the devotees or even tear up a book or something like that. And then later on, they become devotees. So how is this if they committed offenses? And I explain this. It actually has to do with their attitude. It's just like out of ignorance, it's not considered so serious. But if they're actually doing that out of envy, then it's very, very serious. So it depends on one's attitude. Krishna sees what's in one's heart. But the as far as Shobhari Muni, he had great anger towards Garuda. You know, great anger towards Garuda. He had become immersed in material consciousness because of his association with fish. So?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that. Like, how could such a great sage, you know, get to that place of so much anger?
Because he wasn't a pure devotee. You become sentimental. I mean, what happened with Bharat Maharaj? Bart Maharaj was a great devotee, almost on the highest platform of devotional service, yet he became attached to a deer.
So anger comes from...
Attachment. Attachment. Thinking oneself to be... Because Shobari Muni thought himself to be the protector, maintainer of the fish. And it was misplaced compassion. Just like sometimes we may have like a little sentimental compassion about something. And that was sentimental, misplaced compassion. And he thought of himself as to be the controller. The controller means the protector, the well-wisher of the fish, the protector of the fish. And as a result of that, he got extremely angry and committed offenses against Garuda. And he should have known better. I mean, because he knew that Garuda wasn't just simply out of ignorance, because he knew Garuda was a great devotee. It's not, you know, if he just thought Garuda was a big bird from Sesame Street or something like that, that would have been a different story. But because he knew Garuda was the carrier of Lord Vishnu. Otherwise it would have been just like an innocent mistake. You know, here's this bird coming. But obviously, you know, he had some knowledge. Because he was an educated sage. It's described, he was a sage. He's a reacher.
You also mentioned envy. Did you know this? Envy.
That means thinking oneself better than someone else.
Yeah, and but I'm just wondering how that leads to offenses.
Envy? Why does it lead to offenses? Because you want to establish your superiority. That's how it leads to offenses. I'm better than you. Anyway, interesting story. Just be careful next time Garuda wants to eat something.